The FDA has ordered pharmacies to stop production of custom-made versions of GLP-1s. And Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost warned medical spas in April to stop making false or misleading claims about their compounded weight loss drugs. So what should consumers know when it comes to these drugs? And what are their options if they need medication that insurance won't cover? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the difference between FDA-approved drugs and their compounded counterparts are Dr. Jennifer Whitwer, an endocrinologist at the Christ Hospital Health Network. Thanks for being here, Dr. Whitwer.
Thank you very much for having me, Lucy.
And founder of On the Pen, Dave Knapp. Welcome to the program, Dave.
Thank you, Lucy. It's a pleasure to be here. Appreciate it.
Well, we're grateful to have you both here. Dr. Whitwer, how do these drugs work?
So these drugs, they are incretin mimetics, and incretins are nutrient-sensing hormones that are released from the gut in response to food. And there's actually multiple incretins out, but one of them is a peptide called glucagon-like peptide 1, or GLP-1. And of note, there is another one called gastric inhibitory polypeptide, or GIP. And glucagon-like peptide 1, the mimetic of it is semaglutide, also known more commonly in regards to the brand names of Wegovy or Ozempic. And a combination of GIP and GLP-1 is tirzepatide, more commonly known brand names of Mounjaro and Zepbound. And these medications, again, they respond to an ingestion of food, or they mimic the hormones that do. And so they influence things like appetite as well as gastric emptying. They also are responsible for sending signals to the pancreatic beta cells to stimulate the secretion of insulin.
What kind of side effects do these drugs have, Dr. Whitwer?
Well, because these are nutrient-sensing hormones that are released from the gut, they have a lot of gut-related side effects, things like nausea, vomiting, upset stomach, abdominal pain, constipation, and diarrhea are common. Very rarely, they can cause a condition called pancreatitis, and this is more likely if you've had pancreatitis in the past. There is a warning on the label that there is a risk for individuals who have history of medullary thyroid cancer or family members with MEN syndrome to not take these medications, because in rat studies, they saw an increased risk for medullary thyroid cancer in those rats that took high doses of these medications. Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Whitwer, I understand these drugs were developed to treat diabetes and have been found to be very effective for weight loss. Can they be prescribed to patients as a weight loss treatment?
Yes, they can. So for individuals who are seeking therapy for their diabetes, they are in one brand, Mounjaro or Ozempic. For individuals who are seeking these medications for treatment of change in weight, or optimization of their metabolic health, they can be found in forms of Wegovy and Zepbound.
What do we know about the long-term effects of using these drugs for weight loss, Dr. Whitwer?
Well, incretins have been used since the early 2000s. In fact, the first incretin was released in 2005. And from that data, we do know that in regards to the last 20 years, they are relatively safe medications. From a diabetes perspective, in regards to using them for treatment or assistance with weight change, we don't have very long-term data. The data that we have shows that they are safe and they can help to afford or help maintain a weight change. We do feel, though, that these medications are likely going to be needed long-term. That's almost like a blood pressure medication. When we prescribe a blood pressure medication to bring down your blood pressure, we optimize your physiology, and once your blood pressure is stable, we don't stop that medication, and these are very similar.
Dave, I know you've been using this medication for diabetes. What has your experience been like?
Well, I have just got to say, these medications have been an absolute game changer, and one of the things that I've repeated over and over over the course of my time creating content and writing articles is that as a type 2 diabetic, one of the things that it has afforded me is just the ability to feel like a normal person again. In other words, I can eat normal food. I can eat a normal diet. I can eat it in normal proportions. And my body's response to that is normal. There are the not the normal huge peaks and valleys in blood sugar spikes when I consume carbohydrates that they would be without the medication. And it's helped me to once again be able to lose some weight. I struggled mightily for about a year after I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. I was on a strict keto diet. I was put on that diet by my primary care physician, who's also an obesity medicine specialist. And it did a great job at helping to control my glucose, but it did nothing in the way of helping me lose weight. I went from 317 pounds white knuckling keto, or excuse me, 319 pounds to 312 pounds in a full year of white knuckling. It wasn't until I introduced Mounjaro into the equation that I was able to, over the course of the last couple years, drop my body weight by about 11, 12% and to be able to maintain that weight loss as well. And that's really been the key for me, because throughout my adult life, living with obesity and type 2 diabetes more recently, is that I've always yo-yoed. I've been able to take off 20 to 30 pounds, but within 12 months, that weight would have come back on and then some. And so it's really helped to stop that cycle and allow me to live what I call just normally.
Yeah. Dr. Whitwer, I want to get your thoughts on that cycle that Dave just talked about, because I know so many people who have tried other weight loss efforts or other strategies to change their weight have the same thing happen. They maybe lose a considerable amount of weight, but then within a few months or a year, it's back. Is that, I would assume that's not good for your body. What are the impacts of that kind of yo-yoing that Dave just talked about?
So that is very common for individuals to experience after a weight change. So I kind of like to think of our bodies like pirate ships, and we have a lot of greedy pirates on our ship that are constantly seeking treasure. And once we get that treasure, we put the excess amount of treasure that we don't need into our savings account or our adipose tissue. And if we ever steal some of the pirate savings account, well, they remember how rich they used to be, and they are not happy that you've dwindled down their savings account. And so they are always trying to get back to that level of richness and even more, because that savings is needed for an emergency. And so this yo-yoing up and down, the problem is that when you lose weight, you don't always just lose your savings account. Sometimes you lose your skeletal muscle. And so every time you have this weight change, you're losing a little bit of your skeletal muscle, which helps to maintain your basal metabolic rate. And therefore, the next time you try again, it's going to be even harder. So this yo-yoing, it has a lot of metabolic consequences long term.
Dave, you mentioned the articles and the coverage that you provide on your platform, On the Pen. Based on all the research you've done and your own experience, how expensive can it be to use these name brand drugs as a weight loss treatment if they're not prescribed to someone, you know, for diabetes?
Yeah, it's an excellent question, because it cuts to the heart of the matter with these medications. So we hear amazing news each and every day about the latest study that has dropped with these medications, whether it is a 50% reversal in obstructive sleep apnea or a reduction in major cardiovascular events. Whatever it is, it seems like there is a deluge of positive information. But one of the things we talk about it On the Pen frequently is all the breakthroughs in the world mean nothing if they aren't accessible to people. And the cost has been definitely prohibitive for many people, especially those using these incretin mimetics for obesity management. And that is simply because we have a very convoluted system in the United States of how drugs are priced. We have a list price that is often multiple times what the costs of prescription drugs are in the rest of the world, which is fine if you are covered under your insurance, because ultimately they're between your insurance and manufacturer savings plans. People are actually paying much less than they pay in the rest of the world. So for example, for me on Mounjaro, because I have the type 2 diabetes diagnosis and type 2 diabetes is widely covered and GLP-1s are widely accepted on different formularies, I have had the the privilege of only having to pay $25 a month for my treatment. Whereas most people who are on a GLP-1 medication, brand name medication for weight loss, do not have policies that include obesity medicine coverage. And so then they are more sort of captive to the list price of the medication, which is, depending on which one you're talking about, anywhere from $900 to $1,300 a month. And then from there, you may add a manufacturer savings card, but still most people who are on these medications for obesity management, if they're on the brand name medication, are paying upwards of $500 to $600 a month.
Wow. Well, we're talking about GLP-1 medications and the difference between FDA-approved drugs, those name brand drugs, and their compounded counterparts. Do you have questions or comments, or do you have experience with these drugs? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dave, compounding pharmacies, we're going to get into this part of this discussion now, got permission to make cheaper versions of these drugs. And was that because there was a shortage at one point?
Yes, this has been an extremely complicated weave to unravel. Basically, what we have in the United States are compound pharmacies, which, as you mentioned, are able to make copies of drugs that are still under patent and mass produce them when a drug is designated by the FDA to be in a shortage. Now, there are two different types of compound pharmacies. There are 503B pharmacies, which are the ones that I just mentioned, the ones that have the ability. They're basically drug manufacturing factories that can mass produce copies of branded medications in shortage. Then we have a 503A pharmacy, which is able to make, regardless of a shortage, make custom doses and custom formulations of medications that may not otherwise be patient may not otherwise tolerate a branded version. So in the case of semaglutide, which is the active ingredient in Wegovy and Ozempic, oftentimes people cannot tolerate the nausea maybe that comes along with that. So a compound pharmacy may come along and make it with a B12 additive, for example. Those can happen in regardless of the shortages that are going on. But the mass production, which has really proliferated in a way that we've never seen before in the United States with any specific drug class, was allowed to happen while these drugs were in shortage. And because they have been such blockbuster drugs, nobody can really hear the name Ozempic without singing the song in their head. It's just become part of the zeitgeist in the United States. But with the rise in popularity of the branded drugs, people and the efficacy, people have been willing to pay the high price tags enough so that they've gone into shortage. And then you have this whole sort of secondary market of compounded medications, which have really been a more affordable and oftentimes more accessible option for patients that obviously until these drug manufacturers worked with the FDA to get them removed from the shortage list, which has sort of changed the landscape in a pretty dramatic way in the last couple of months.
We've got a lot more to talk about, and we will continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, skaters will be here to talk about a new roller derby venue in town. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about GLP-1 medications and the difference between FDA-approved drugs and their compounded counterparts. My guests are Dr. Jennifer Whitwer, an endocrinologist at the Christ Hospital Health Network and founder of On the Pen, Dave Knapp. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And we do have a caller on the line. Hi, Zach. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, my comment was about earlier when he was mentioning type 2 diabetics being on a weight loss or a supplement that can assist with their diabetes and weight loss and the insurance coverage. And I was just commenting that I'm a type 1 diabetic, and I've had multiple times where I've had multiple doctors try to prescribe me something that's meant specifically for type 2 diabetes, but getting denied insurance coverage on it because the studies haven't been done to make sure it's perfectly safe for type 1. And it's just kind of frustrating seeing all of these medications and all of the wonder drugs that Ozempic can, you know, provide to type 2 diabetics. But then I'm type 1. It's just not the right kind. And I'm looking at, you know, like you said, $500, $700 a month to get something that multiple doctors have said would be fantastic for my scenario.
I bet that is frustrating. Dr. Whitwer, do you have thoughts on that, what Zach's been experiencing?
Yes, so that is a very frustrating position to be in. Diabetes doesn't necessarily fit into two perfect boxes or types. So there's not necessarily someone who fits perfectly into type 1 or perfectly into type 2. There's actually lots of different reasons to develop diabetes in different forms. And we have lots of tools now that are available to help to optimize glycemic control, even in settings of individuals diagnosed with something like type 1 diabetes. So for individuals who have high insulin requirements, these medications can be extremely efficient at lowering that insulin requirement and improving overall glycemic control to mitigate long-term effects of having high blood sugars. So we are very frustrated by this as well. But at this time, these medications do not have that official FDA approval for anything but type 2 diabetes in the form of Ozempic and Mounjaro.
Thanks for your call, Zach. We sure appreciate it. And I hope things turn around for you soon. Dr. Whitwer, before our break, we were talking about these different types of compounding pharmacies. The Ohio Board of Pharmacy cracked down on clinics in Columbus, Cleveland, Dayton, and Cincinnati for giving patients weight loss drugs labeled for research use only. What does that labeling mean?
So on occasion, we prescribe medication when we are looking at a certain population to study the impact of a drug. And so we can provide these medications sort of off-label or for a different indication if we were studying it. And so in those instances, there were places that were prescribing these medications what they called for research only, but may not have been in the setting of actual research, or they were sort of trying to get around this limitation or prescribe the medication at a more affordable cost.
And what can be the problem, Dr. Whitwer, with people taking drugs that are for research use only if they're not part of a formal research study?
So if they're not coming from the manufacturer and coming from a compounded pharmacy, compounding pharmacies are not regulated in the same way, or all of them are not regulated in the same way that pharmaceutical companies receive FDA regulation. And so there are different doses. There can be additives that we're not quite sure of. And so it can be dangerous to receive these medications because we're not always sure the exact dose or what you're getting with it.
Dave, I understand some people have had problems taking too much of these drugs that they get from a compounding pharmacy because of confusion over how to measure the dose accurately. How complicated can that be?
Well, it can be very, very complicated. And I think Dr. Whitwer touched on this. When medications come from compound pharmacies, they're not all created equal. I think that's the main thing that patients need to understand going into using any potential compounded medication through their doctor. Of course, when you talk, just kind of touch on the research grade for a moment, there's a whole gray market that sort of operates outside of the compound pharmacy system. So when we talked about 503A and 503B, the research grade is kind of even outside of any regulation at all, where 503A pharmacies that give the custom doses, custom formulations, the 503A pharmacies are governed by their state pharmacy boards. And then the 503Bs that were making the copies of the branded medication, or the language within the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, is essentially copies. So they were just kind of a one for one, same dosing structure. The challenge to your question is that when people are drawing from a multi-use vial, they're typically drawing using insulin pens or insulin syringes, I should say. You know, I like to use the word pen, being the founder of On the Pen, but the insulin syringes are not all created equal because they all sort of have different units of measure. Some of the syringes hold more or less volume. And so people can get confused on units of measure when they're talking milligrams and units, and it can be very confusing to patients. And if there isn't good conversation happening back and forth between the prescribing doctor and the pharmacy and the patient, if there isn't good communication throughout that loop, people can definitely be open to under or overdosing.
Dr. Whitwer, what kind of problems can taking too much of this medicine cause?
So mostly gastrointestinal side effects, like I had previously mentioned. People can have nausea, vomiting, upset stomach. They can increase their risk for developing severe complications like pancreatitis and delayed gastric emptying. These medications taken in a high amount could afford a significant amount of weight change, and there are symptoms from having too much weight change or weight loss. So if people have rapid weight change, they're more likely to lose skeletal muscle, they're likely to have hair loss, they're likely to feel very cold, they can have decrease in sex drive. There can be some severe consequences from taking too much of these medications.
Dr. Whitwer, you know, we've talked about these compounding pharmacies, how there are different types. There's this gray market that Dave mentioned earlier. What should people be looking for to make sure the drugs they're getting are safe and that they're properly prescribed?
So we had previously recommended that they receive this medication from state licensed pharmacies that had any kind of 503A or B supervision. However, the FDA has cracked down in regards to those pharmacies being able to prescribe these medications. There are some places that are sort of just taking the hit for the fine, but you got to be very, very cautious in where these medications come from.
Yeah. What, Dave, is there any specific advice that you give people about that, like getting the drugs they need and staying safe?
Yeah, my standard answer is talk to your doctor. I am not a medical professional, but I do represent hundreds of thousands of patients at this point who are on these medications. And one of the things that I've repeated over and over for the last couple of years in my own personal research is if I were to use compounded medications, my mantra was it would be 503B or it's not for me. The reason that I sort of hold to that is because the 503Bs, again, I know this is getting into the weeds a bit, but the 503Bs are the ones making essentially copies during shortages. And because you're getting essentially a copy from a 503B, 503B pharmacies actually have some FDA oversight through the current goods and manufacturing process, again, through sort of designated through the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. So you have some uniformity in the way that 503Bs are regulated because there is some level of federal regulation. When you're talking 503As, you are talking, again, pharmacies that are governed by their state boards. And oftentimes, because people are prescribed these through telemedicine, they are getting their compounded medication from a different state altogether. And so it can be very challenging for patients to, A, even know where their medications are coming from, but then B, having the ability to then look up the state pharmacy board information and stuff like that. So especially now that the 503Bs have been pretty much all but stopped. They can still make semaglutide for a few more weeks, but the tirzepatide has stopped. Now it becomes even more difficult. It's like the safest option for patients, I feel like, was shut down first. And now we go to this 503A where it can be a little bit more challenging and all the more important for patients to work with their doctor, know what pharmacy their medication is being sent from, and then look them up on that state's pharmacy board website and try to find their track record of sterility and inspections, et cetera, et cetera.
Dr. Whitwer, do you expect there to be a generic version of these drugs at some point? How long could it be before we see that happen?
So we do expect eventually there will be a generic form of these medications. But even before that, we're going to see numerous different types of incretins being produced. So going through FDA approval now, there are 8 to 10 of these medications that are very similar to the ones that are on the market. And why that is as important is because when we have more options, that creates competition, and it can drive the price of these medications down, and it can help to have insurance coverage be more affordable. These medications are extremely impactful for overall health for multiple individuals, and we are very happy to see these improvements in metabolic health. At this time, because there has been a change in the FDA opinion in regards to compounding pharmacies, we are only really recommending branded forms. It's difficult at this time, again, because they're still on patent. It's going to be quite a few more years until a generic form is available. There is a generic form of Victoza, which is a type of GLP-1, but that's intended for individuals with type 2 diabetes. For prescriptions for assistance with weight change, it's going to be an extended amount of time before a generic form will be available.
Well, I've been talking with Dr. Jennifer Whitwer, an endocrinologist at the Christ Hospital Health Network and founder of On the Pen, Dave Knapp. Thank you both so much for your time today and for this important conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, the Cincinnati Roller Girls are taking to the rink in a new venue. We'll talk with some skaters. This is Cincinnati Edition.